This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. State lawmakers are still working out the details of a budget before they adjourn this summer. One of the most controversial provisions is in the state Senate spending plan. It eliminates funding for 8,500 teacher assistants. The money would go to hire more teachers and reduce class size. The Senate's going to have to reconcile that plan with the House and the governor's proposals, which don't include those cuts. Rima Crace has talked with teacher assistants, researchers, and state officials about the issue. She's WUNC's education reporter, and she joins us now from Raleigh. Hello, Rima.
Hi, Frank.
What have you learned in talking with teachers' assistants in the state about this plan?
Well, they are not happy, clearly. So they've been coming to Raleigh for the last number of weeks, lobbying legislators, telling them, please don't cut our jobs. And this also just isn't news for them. I mean, in years previous, their jobs have always been on the chopping block. And, you know, I talked with a few who say they're fearful of getting a pink slip in the mail during the summer because they just don't know once they come back for the fall if they'll have a job. And they're personally offended. I talked with Ashlyn Montgomery. She's a teacher assistant from Davie County recently.
I don't think they understand at all what it's like teaching children these days. I mean, at this rate, we might as well just go back to a one-room schoolhouse. You know, just one teacher in the little classroom could teach the whole little all the little children.
Well, that's Ashlyn Montgomery, a teacher assistant, one of the 8,500 teacher assistants who could lose their jobs if the Senate plan goes into effect. And you can expect that that teacher assistants would be concerned about this. But the Senate theory here is that we'll use the money that we're paying teacher assistants with now, and we'll hire more teachers. That would have the effect of reducing class size, which has a better impact, according to Senate leaders, on instruction. Talk about that idea.
Yeah, so the idea is, as you said, to hire more teachers so they can transition to reducing class sizes between in the grades between kindergarten through third grade. So they're looking at reducing it to, you know, 15, 17 students, just by a couple of students over the next couple of years. And, you know, whenever you ask them why they're doing this, they always say it's because of the research. Research says that, you know, smaller class sizes are important and lead to better student outcomes. So I was curious to see if that's actually true. And I talked with a number of researchers, and it turns out it's actually pretty complicated. Of course, some researchers say, yeah, of course, it leads to better student outcomes. And others actually think it's very, very expensive and that it makes a lot more sense to spend that money in hiring better teachers and making sure there's at least a high-quality, effective teacher in each classroom.
So that's one question. So you say they're divided on the question of whether or not just reducing class size by itself has better outcomes. But then there's the question of, well, what about teacher assistants? What happens to if you eliminate them? That's another set of hands and ears in that classroom. And if you do have kids, they can be important. What's the impact of that?
So, you know, when I first looked into this question, I was like, well, you know, obviously having an extra human being in the classroom, I assume will help, right? But I was actually pretty surprised when I talked with researchers, and there hasn't been that much research out there about teacher assistants, but they say the little that is out there actually shows that they don't add any academic benefit at all to students. Of course, they help out in different ways, but just academically, they don't add much, apparently. So Jeremy Finn, he's a professor of education at the State University of New York at Buffalo. And like I said, he just says they're not properly equipped to help students academically.
There are cases where it results in some academic harm or certainly disagreements between the kids and their parents and the school. So North Carolina would not be the first place to decide not to keep their teacher aides and use that money more productively for small classes.
Go ahead, Rima.
I was going to say, of course, there are huge exceptions, he says, you know, teacher assistants for special ed classes. But what he says is because most teacher assistants aren't required to have a professional educator's license, and, you know, North Carolina, they just require a minimum high school diploma or GED, and some districts require more training and credentials. He just doesn't think that they're properly equipped, which, of course, others, like mainly teacher assistants, would very much disagree with that.
Now, we take a look at the Senate's plan. It eliminates the funding for teacher assistants. That doesn't mean that local school districts might not find a way to pay those teacher assistants if they choose to spend their money in a different way. Is that right?
Yeah, of course. In previous years when we've seen cuts to funding on the state level for teacher assistants, school districts find ways to keep them on. Maybe they scale back their hours or they just have to make tough decisions. They have to maybe cut back some programs or, you know, it's a balance act.
Interestingly enough, a lot of TAs are also required to be bus drivers. I wonder what impact that would have if we cut the funding for them.
Yeah, and especially in rural districts, lots of districts require teacher assistants to drive buses. Others don't. But yeah, that's a real question. I mean, I think some districts would be severely impacted if they lost a lot of their teacher assistants, and they say maybe they would have to, you know, rely more on custodians or cafeteria workers, or maybe change around bus routes.
And as we've seen many times this year, the Senate is at odds with the House and the governor on this, so I guess they're going to have to reconcile. How does that play out over the weeks ahead?
Yeah, I mean, they will, it's probably one of the bigger sticking points, and they will debate about it, or, you know, at least behind closed doors. And, you know, last year, the Senate actually proposed something very similar to eliminate a lot of teacher assistants, and everyone was worried. And really, you know, I think in many cases it's used as a bargaining chip. So I don't think there could be a scenario where, you know, 8,500 teacher assistants won't actually lose their jobs or that many at all.
The negotiations continue. Well, there's more education news. Another hearing this week in a decade-old lawsuit about equal education opportunities. In the 1990s, the state Supreme Court ruled that all children in the state have a right to receive a sound basic education. That was after a hearing in the case of Leandro versus North Carolina. Since then, a Superior Court judge holds hearings to monitor the state's progress in equalizing education. Rima, you've been at the hearings in Raleigh this week. Let me start out by asking you how the court defines what the state has to do, or how identifies what the state has to do to protect this sound basic education.
Well, this case actually dates back to the mid-90s, where a number of parents and children from five low-income districts, so like Hoke, Halifax, Cumberland, to list a few, they filed a lawsuit and said, you know, our kids here just don't have the same opportunity as kids in wealthier districts. We don't have the money for it. We don't have money for science labs or textbooks. And so they filed this lawsuit. It's a very long story. Other plaintiffs end up joining. The wealthier school districts joined and said similar things. You know, we can't help our most at-risk students. And, you know, the ruling on this actually didn't touch on the funding issue. They said they don't have a constitutional obligation for equal funding. But they did say that the state, North Carolina, is required by the Constitution to make sure every student has the opportunity to a basic sound education. And so this doesn't necessarily mean they have to get that sound basic education, but it at least needs to be available for them.
The opportunity, and of course, as you say, it's been going on now for since the 1990s. The state has never been found in compliance in all those hearings. Yesterday, the court again held monitoring hearings. What's new in this case?
Well, this case, the judge, Howard Manning, who's been overseeing this case, he ordered the State Board of Education to come up with a definite plan on how they're going to correct what he calls educational deficiencies. Here he is yesterday at the first day of the court hearing.
If you have the principal, you have the teacher, and you have the resources they need in each classroom, you are constitutionally compliant, and children will learn. And don't try to tell me during this hearing that this is the case in North Carolina, because it's not.
So the judge has spelled it out pretty clearly. He feels, again, the state is not in compliance. What happens next?
Well, yesterday and today and tomorrow, several folks, our educators largely, are testifying in front of the court. And really from both sides, some are saying, you know, yesterday a former chairman of the State Board of Education testified and said, we just don't have competent certified teachers and principals in every single classroom. And so they're pointing out a lot of the deficiencies. You know, they talked yesterday about how some school boards wrongfully hiring, getting involved in the hiring process. They talked about how test scores are still low. And the State Board of Education is responding and saying, you know, we have this plan and we will continue to do what we've been doing and expand on the programs. So, you know, we'll make sure more students have access to pre-K. We'll make sure, you know, we're asking for more school psychologists and counselors to help at-risk students. And the plaintiffs, it's, you know, to some degree, won't even acknowledge it as a plan. They call it a so-called plan.
Well, so what would it take to make Judge Manning satisfied? In other words, funding by itself, the court has already said that you don't have to equalize the funding to be in compliance. But funding clearly is an important element in this. How do we make the decision, or how do you decide that funding is sufficient if it doesn't have to be equal? And then what part does testing play in determining whether or not each of these students is getting a sound, or at least the opportunity for a sound education?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, it's unclear, you know, what will happen in the next couple of days. You know, a couple of educators have testified saying that really the General Assembly needs to step up and fund schools, because when this case initially started, you know, they weren't necessarily mad at the State Board of Education or the Department of Public Instruction. They're mad at the General Assembly for not fully funding schools. And they say, you know, years later, we're still 20 years later, we're still in the same position. And so, you know, that's a huge element. And also the schools are running out of money. So they, for the last few years, they've gotten federal funding from a grant called Race to the Top. They got $400 million, which funded a lot of the professional development. It helped turn around a lot of low performing schools. And that money's going to run out this year.
All right, Reema, thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank.
Reema Crace, WUNC's education policy reporter. You can see more about both of these stories and all of Reema's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we talked to Emily Bingham about what she discovered when she climbed the family tree. Hear about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.